This podcast is brought to you by Kyoto Japan Automotive Group, a company which I've known personally for over 20 years, and your one-stop shop for tires, batteries, and auto parts. Visit their website at www.kyotojap.com for more details. I hope you enjoy the podcast. My first guest is a friend with the wanderlust bug, an insatiable appetite for the intrepid, and an unflagging sense of optimism and faith in the basic goodness of humankind. A fitting spirit, I'm sure you'd all agree, to begin the new year. Bernard Salzman is my guest, friend, and colleague who lives not so far from me, but high up in the Jura Mountains in a charming place called Saint-Serge. Some of you listening might know it, and or even live up here too. Bernard describes himself as a citizen of the world with a Swiss passport. He tells me that he's at home on three continents, Africa. He was born in Madagascar and lived 35 years in Africa, North America. He studied at university in the USA for 6 years, and Switzerland, his home country, since returning from Rwanda after the 1994 genocide. As he and I talk, you'll learn more about his fascinating story and how about 5 years ago, he set himself the personal goal of driving around the world on his own, on quite literally a voyage of discovery. Happy New Year to you, Bernard. Welcome to the McKay interview, and thanks for inviting me to your home up in the Jura to record this interview. Bernard.
Thank you, Michael, for inviting me. Thank you for being here. Such a pleasure to see you again.
Good to see you too, Bernard. Bernard, please give me a sense of the scale of your planned voyage so that I can understand the true dimensions of what you set out to do. I mean, you started from your home here in Saint-Serge, but in which direction did you start to drive? And how did you decide? And how long did you or do you plan to be away?
As I was planning and wanting to circumnavigate the world, obviously I had to drive eastwards towards Central Asia, Mongolia, etc., Australia. Whereas if I would have started my trip westwards, I would have to cross an ocean, which was not the purpose of an overland trip. My journey was sort of intended to take about 5 years, because looking at the maps and the kilometers involved, I needed to have enough time to see places and meet people along the way.
And how much of the your land and sea journey have you already covered? I mean, you're here back at home for the Christmas and New Year break, but give me an idea of how many countries you've already visited and which ones they are.
Right. During the last 3 years and 4 months, during which I have been on the road, not counting my trips back to Switzerland, I've been through 42 countries, but I've crossed 62 borders, meaning that on a number of occasions, I went back and forth between two countries to maximize the sites and maximize visiting places and meeting people.
That sounds like a lot. So 60 times, it wasn't because you had problems crossing the border, but because you chose to do that, or a bit of both.
Yes and no. COVID came about COVID. As I was just about to reach Australia. So, for example, that added two border crossings because during COVID, I left my vehicle in Melbourne, Australia, flew back to Switzerland for 2 years before returning and continuing my journey. So my journey, in fact, was started in 2018, but for 2 years, I did not travel. And I was here in Switzerland with my family, which was also very good.
So I'm sure we're going to get back to talking about COVID in our conversation, because clearly that's a big event for all of us, and it must have affected you in some way. But before we get into the heart of our conversation, please tell me a little bit about yourself. Where were you born and where did you grow up? And maybe therein lie some clues to your wanderlust spirit.
I feel I was lucky to be born on the island of Madagascar. Why? Because it's a different country from my citizenship. Both of my parents were Swiss. So I grew up in a different land in basically Africa, even though Madagascar is an island. my early years, when I was like 6, 7, 8 years before really going to primary school, I did a number of trips, field trips with my father in his Chevrolet pickup, and we took dirt roads, getting stuck in the mud, having flat tires. So right from my early childhood, I was used to travel, and I just enjoyed it, and it was a drug which was planted into me. Later on, when I was a student in the USA, I had, of course, a limited budget, but I still wanted to see more of the U.S. So I hitchhiked from I had a ride to Los Angeles, and I hitchhiked all the way from Los Angeles
really?
To Chicago.
Good God.
In order to discover the U.S. Later on in life...
But hold on, let me stop you there. Before you go to the later on in life, give me and the listeners some indicator. What did your father do?
My parents, my father was a missionary involved with the Seventh-day Adventist Church.
He was a minister. He had a parochial responsibility minister his flock, so to speak, in that part of the world.
Yeah, yeah.
My gosh, that must have been really interesting.
And so he had a huge territory to cover look after. So he was quite often on the road. And before starting primary school, which I started a bit late, my mother did a bit of homeschooling.
Sure.
I did a lot of trips with him.
I see.
And that was amazing.
I can imagine. I've never been to Madagascar. I once met the ambassador of Madagascar in Geneva, but it's just a remarkable, because the island is so huge. It's what must be the second biggest island or third after Greenland. It's big, very big.
And later in my life... I wanted to discover more of Africa. I was working in Africa, and later on I did a number of trips to drive my old Land Rover. Well, at the time it was new.
Yes.
And did a long journey from, which covered from North Cape in Norway to Cape Town in South Africa and back. So it was 66,000 kilometers over a span of 14 years. All of this trying to see more of the world and its people and the diversity of planet Earth.
Well, you've brought me right back round to the question which I'm really dying to listen to your answer. You must be aware, Bernard, of the famous "because it's there" quotation attributed to the great mountain climber George Mallory when he was asked, "Why did you want to climb Mount Everest?" Well, let me ask you the same question. Why are you taking yourself away from your family and doing this? And why do you want to drive around the world?
It's the one word would be curiosity. What is behind the next kilometer? What is the next people like? What is the wonders of nature further away from what you know? Basically, yes, it's a very powerful lust for discovering new places, new people, and I put the underlining under new people and the diversity of people that you see as you travel overland from one continent to another, or even within a given continent, you have a diversity of people, diversity of climates, regions, and it is amazing, and it is for me very exciting and very nice to meet people as I travel. Curiosity is the answer.
My God, well, it must be a very strong drive in your case, Bernard, because it's really an exceptional trip that you're making.
Right.
Is the wrong word. It's a voyage. It's a journey.
Yeah, thanks. Yes, and I'm lucky to have the privilege to do this trip with the support of my wife, allowing me to be away so much from home, and my children supporting my trip. So yes, this is a positive factor.
So in many ways, you are a very lucky man, Bernard Salzman, a very lucky man indeed. Listen, some of our listeners are probably car and motor vehicle aficionados and might be curious to know a little bit about what you're driving on such a long and unusual journey. So tell me and the listeners how you came to choose the vehicle on which you've been and are so reliant as your mode of transport. In simple, non-technical, what are you driving?
As an introduction, I did a lot of traveling with a short wheelbase Land Rover, which is a small car. Later on, I had a better car, the Toyota Land Cruiser.
This is before the voyage. This is before the big voyage.
Before the voyage. And this gave me the insight that for a long trip, especially now being a bit older, I will be turning 72 years old this year.
Congratulations.
I wanted to have a bit more creature comfort.
You're a young man.
Thank you, yes. And I'm lucky to be in good health to be able to do this trip at my age. So that's really important indeed. So I wanted to have a bigger vehicle to have more comfort as I was undertaking this long journey. Land Cruisers, which are famously reliable cars, and I love them, were excluded. I wanted either a bigger panel van, four-wheel drive, and or a small truck, four-wheel drive. Four-wheel drive was a mandatory factor.
I can understand that.
I loved crossing deserts. I've been through the Sahara, Namibia Desert, Death Valley in the U.S., etc., and I want to be able to go off track and to small remote places. So four-wheel drive and a rugged four-wheel drive, not an all-weather four-wheel drive.
So what did you decide on? What is the vehicle?
So in the end, I bought a very unusual truck called Brimont Brut. It's a French-made vehicle, which was made by the company called Brimont, which went bankrupt 30 years ago. My vehicle is now 32 years old.
Oh, so it's quite an old vehicle,
yes,
relatively speaking. Yeah.
So in a way, it's good. And in a way, I did want an older vehicle because it's more basic and simple to repair anywhere in the world.
Yeah.
People that I've met along the world, along my journey with a newer vehicle, have sometimes issues with various electronics components going bad, and an older vehicle is simple. So, yes, I took this five-ton small truck, organized the back part of it into a nice, comfortable living quarter, and it's a diesel-powered turbo. Turbo is important when you go to the high elevation. If you have a non-turbo vehicle, the engine will lose much power, whereas with a turbo, you don't lose as much power because I took passes of like 4,600 meters, almost as high as Mont Blanc,
that's
which
very
you see
high.
Here.
Yeah, sure.
So I'm in a way pleased with my choice.
And the cabin in the back was self-contained and secure for your own safety because you never know what you're going to come across in
some
countries.
Right, exactly. So the back living quarters is secure. I also went to great lengths to make a communication door between the living quarters and the driving cab. So should something not nice happen while I sleep somewhere, I can always hop in the driver's seat, start the engine, and be off
if needed.
Okay. But it has never happened.
Right. My first guest of 2024 is Bernard Salzmann, a Swiss, a good friend, and a world citizen who is at the midpoint of a five-year voyage to drive around the world alone. And we're talking at his home about his experiences en route. Bernard, I want to ask you about your experiences of humankind, of us, the human beings, with the three big caveats. In fact, actually four, and they're really big: language, race, color, maybe also religion. So four big caveats. Despite these evident differences, aren't we really all essentially the same? And what is your personal experience, and in particular your global and circumnavigational driving experience, taught you about humankind, Bernard?
Thank you for asking this question. And this is something I really emphasize each time people ask me about my trip. It is so heartwarming to see that all over the world, what I've not yet seen all over the world, but over most of the world that I have seen so far, I see good people, I see helpful people, I see people understanding of the differences that we have, and I see that humankind is made up of good people. And this is so important because oftentimes, for various reasons, maybe politicians or others, other reasons, tend to stir up the differences between the inhabitants of planet Earth and cause wars, tribulations, with dreadful impacts on the population. But the most people are all the same with a big heart, and it is so nice. Whenever I stop of my vehicle, get down from the driver's cab, look at whoever is around me with an open face and a smile, I get an open face and smiling back at me, and people ask questions where I'm coming from, where I'm going, and it's really amazing that the world is made of good people, whether in Iran, and parentheses, Iran was one of my favorite, is one of my favorite country because the welcoming of the Iranians, because of the diversity, because of the culture, etc. But anyway, going back to, so people accept us whichever way we are, and we come along as long as we accept them as they are. And that could be, like I said, in Iran, or in Mongolia, or in China, or in Indonesia.
We're going to come to some of these countries a bit later, but I know that in your career you'd worked for the International Committee of the Red Cross, and so I wanted to ask you a particular question. The effect that people seeing your registration plates, because I imagine you must have a Swiss registration plate on the vehicle and the white cross on the red background. Does that have an effect on people? Do people recognize it generally, or only a certain type or class of educated people? What's been your experience on that?
Okay, the only way people can realize that I'm Swiss or I drive a Swiss registered vehicle is if they see the back plate, which is kind of rather small.
Yeah.
I do not have, unlike many other overlanders that put a big flag of their country of origin, I did not want to advertise that I'm Swiss,
yeah,
or that I have a Swiss registered vehicle. That's not important to me. Rather, I did put some graphics on my vehicle depicting the diversity of mankind. And I have a punchline, which is on the side of my vehicle, saying, I baptized my Land Rover, my vehicle, the Land Roamer.
Because Land Roamer?
Exactly.
Okay.
Because I like to roam the world.
Yeah.
And I have a caption line saying, this Land Roamer is my home. Planet Earth is my backyard. Plus a graphic of the world in a one globe picture with very nice graphic. And the look of my vehicle is emanating positive vibrations. People just smile at me, wave their hands, and it's really a nice introduction to connect with people.
That's a nice story. I really like that. Now, look, let's just continue a little bit because the time is ticking away. With all the places, Bernard, you won't be surprised to hear this question from me. With all the places you've visited and the people you've met, there must be highs and there must be lows. There must be most memorable and there must be most unpleasant experiences. Please share a few of the highs and lows and pleasant and unpleasant, because I'm just fascinated to know more.
Some of the highs are meeting people in Iran. Like I've just said before, the welcoming is fantastic. It's people that really have a big, big heart for visitors. Another high place was in Australia, watching the sun rise over Uluru Rock, what was used to be called Ayers Rock.
This is fantastic, right. Sort of loaf-shaped mountain in the
exactly.
Middle of the desert.
Cycling around the rock, which is very big during the day, and watching the sunset over the rock, I felt a fantastic energy, like the Aboriginals did feel for the place, which is a sacred mountain for them. And indeed, this was a very high point. I'm lucky to have had a number of experiences in life, and I'm fairly resilient to, quote, difficulties. There are no problems, there are just issues to be solved. Some of my, so I really never had what we could call low points during this.
And you're not being diplomatic with me, are you?
No.
You sure? Okay.
No.
I can't believe you could have gone that distance. And
okay, of course, I was never, I was not always on highs.
Sure.
But one of the two maybe low points which I could mention was in Mongolia. Even though it was supposedly summer, it was in September, it was already cold with winter coming in. Rain and cold, and I was in remote tracks, remote places with only like 3-4 cars I would see during a whole day. And so there you realize you have to be very careful how you drive. You don't want to have a breakdown. You don't want to have an accident. You don't want to injure yourself.
And you're carrying a spare tank of, is it diesel or gasoline? Or I mean, how do you know where the next petrol station, gas station is going to be?
We're lucky nowadays with, good question. We're lucky with the technological world and wonders with Maps.me and Google Map. We know where the next gas station is.
Really, you can plan to that detail. Yeah. Okay, so that's fundamentally important.
No, it's not an issue. But of course, you have to fill up your tanks
ahead
of time.
Yeah.
Another not really low, but not so high story was I was on a remote track of Australia, and I had a mechanical issue with my truck. The clutch broke down, and I was, of course, could not go drive further. Obviously, being in a remote outback, there was no phone cell coverage, so I had to rely on sending scribble notes to passing-by cars, asking them to send a tow truck to take me back to, quote, civilization, to a town. And I was stranded on that remote track for 6 days until the tow truck came to see me. Fortunately, of course, I had water. Not fortunately, I mean, I always plan to have water and food. Plenty. So I had food and water.
But six days.
But it was a long time.
Was it the heat of the summer or was it winter or what?
It was a bit warm, like only 35 degrees.
A bit
not
warm,
too bad.
35 degrees. Listen, brother, you're at present at home with your family for Christmas and the New Year, but your journey continues. Please tell me where and what is there left for you to visit and see, and where is your motor vehicle now?
From Switzerland, I drove eastward through Central Asia, Mongolia, China, Southeast Asia, shipped my vehicle to Australia. After COVID, I was able to tour Australia and later on ship my vehicle to South America, which was my next destination.
I see, from Australia to South America. Okay.
Right. So in May of 2023, I started traveling in South America, first going to Bolivia, well, from Chile, going up north to Bolivia, Paraguay, then Argentina, all the way to Ushuaia at the bottom of South America. The people of Ushuaia tried to have a bit of marketing and tell us it's the end of the world because it's very far in the south of, on the tip of South America. From there, I left my truck in a nearby town in Chile called Punta Arenas, flew back to Switzerland where I'm speaking with you, Michael.
It's safely in the south of Chile, is it?
On a number of occasions, I left my vehicle, my camper van, in a safe place which you can always find through contacts. And I flew back to Switzerland to see my family. To go back to your question, during the next few months, or in fact, during the whole of 2024, I intend to drive from the bottom of South America, make my way through Argentina, Uruguay, Brazil, later on Peru, Ecuador, Colombia in November. And next year, 2025, will be Central America, North America.
It's an amazing story. Look, last question, Bernard. A dear friend of mine who had a glittering career as a journalist and interviewer with the BBC back in the 70s and 80s taught me that the art of the successful interview is to leave the listeners at the end with a surprising insight, or even two surprising insights. Bernard, what surprising insights do you have to share with us today? And in an earlier conversation, you mentioned China, and you also mentioned to me how much you were or are impressed by planet Earth's diversity and beauty. Tell me more, Bernard. Last question.
Crossing China was enlightening to me. We all have our apprehensions or insights of what we feel China should be like. China is a big country and it has the best and the worst of planet Earth. I saw dreadful air, water, land pollution in some of the industrialized regions like in Xinjiang of China. While at the same time, further away as I was driving towards the Tibet and the high mountains, we had pristine air, clean air, beautiful mountains, century-old monasteries of the Tibetans, and a world apart from the civilization of the industrial civilization that has been done in parts of China where we export our pollution. We buy the finished good here, and all the manufacturing is made in China, and we export our pollution to China. Anyway, this is one thing.
So even though, and I just wanted to add to that, so even though you're a very well-traveled man already before that, that was a surprise to you, that contrast.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. It was because the pollution is definitely very, very bad.
Yeah, I've seen it in China too.
And,
yeah.
But not all over the place, of course, sure. Being it's your country.
It's a massive
What
country,
also yeah. was good, and to touch back on this diversity of mankind and the planet Earth, is that indeed you have century-old places in China. I was able to walk on the Great Wall of China. I was able to see Shangri-La, which was started 7 centuries before Christ BC, and the remote areas of China as well. So indeed the world is full of diversity that could be also embodied in Australia and different places. However, I have a worry that the impact of mankind is destroying our planet. I see the rainforest dwindling. I was on the island of Borneo, and as I had seen books or TV shows of Borneo, I was expecting to see much more rainforest, which I did. Now we have less and less rainforest. I was a few months ago in the north part of Chile, and the big salt flats are being now excavated for being mined to excavate lithium for our batteries, for the electrical cars, etc. Yeah. So in a way, I feel that, yes, the planet is diverse between the deserts, the mountains, the rainforests, but at the same time, the impact of mankind is growing more and more serious upon planet Earth. And I have 2 grandchildren, and I'm afraid that for them, they will not see in 50 years the same places in a similar fashion as what I was able to witness recently.
But in closing, having said all of that, it hasn't shaken your basic faith in humankind and the human species.
Absolutely. And this has been amazing to meet everywhere so many kind people. And I want all the listeners to realize that you should never be afraid to leave your home ground, go to unknown places, because you'll be amazed at what other people, other cultures, other places are like. And people are good all over the place.
Brilliant. Thank you. Thank you for your enthralling and encouraging story. We wish you all bon voyage for the remainder of your trip and a happy and safe new year. My guest today has been Bernard Salzmann, world traveler, global citizen, and currently midway through a 5-year circumnavigation of the globe in a 4x4 vehicle alone. Thank you, Bernard.
Thank you, Michael, for asking me to talk to you.
Happy New Year. Thanks for listening to the McKay Interview podcast, brought to you by Kyoto Japan Automotive Group, a company which I've known personally for over 20 years, and your one-stop shop for tires, batteries, and auto parts. Visit their website at www.kyotojap.com for more details. And you can find more podcasts on Anchor FM. Just Google McKay Interview Anchor FM. Thanks again for listening.